Well, thanks for coming back and joining us for another one. I'm Brent Lockwood with the Woodsman Perspective Podcast, and we're down at Chris's camp house today. You can see we got some decorations behind us.
We borrowed them. Brandon brought some in for us. Yeah.
And look, a lot of times we've had a kind of a common thread. Look, and I know it's coming up on turkey season, but look, we're always thinking about deer, and so we've been talking about a lot of our postseason follow-up, and we've been talking about some things around deer and specifically how our seasons seem to go where you locate a superstar, and y'all heard us talk about the Michael Jordan, that one in a million or whatever superstar that's got the potential. And so we start talking about that, and we started talking about how, man, before you know it, you're doing everything you do is sort of around that one deer.
No question, yeah.
And we got talking about that, and I said, you know who would know more about that than just about anybody I know? That damn Brandon Herkamp.
That's right.
So we made a few phone calls, and we got Brandon in here. And Brandon, I met Brandon through work. We had a work relationship where he's a farmer, and I deal in electricity. So sort of where ag and electricity meets is where we got to know each other. And pretty quick, I could pick up on, you know, turkey hunts, deer hunts, makes turkey calls. We had a lot in common right off. And
well, he's crazy about whitetail deer.
And this dude kills a hammer or two every year.
Every year.
With a bow.
With a bow,
yeah. Your dad bow hunts a lot, too. So both y'all kind of get
mainly bow hunts. Yeah, he loves it.
So Brandon, thank you for coming in to talk to us. And we want to talk about sort of the behind the scenes, what goes into that managing, identifying, growing, protecting, around that, basically living your life around that one deer, one superstar.
Well, y'all know how it is. Sometimes there's a lot of luck involved,
right?
But there's a lot of preparation,
right?
Yeah, you do it year after year, and ain't look, Brandon. every year,
I try to be a little humble.
I started looking for that Facebook picture. I asked you one time. I said, "Man, what kind of tree is that?" Because every year you're bowling with a giant tree in front of that same tree.
Now. And look, everybody's looking at them things and wonder where that's at.
Right, zooming in. So I need one of those trees in my yard.
But you know, before we got on air, I was visiting with Brandon because I'd never met him personally, but heard years about his hunting abilities and how he manages these deer the kind of the same way that we want to manage these deer, that we manage them ourselves.
Yep.
You know, we identify a deer, okay? You know, and deer to people are different. If you're happy with a 140, so be it. That's what you need to kill.
That's right.
You know,
wherever you set that goal.
But you started off kind of like we all did, humble beginnings hunting these deer.
That's right.
Yep. You're in a good county, Knoxby County, Mississippi. Oh, yeah. But you wanted more.
Exactly.
You kill a 140. You kill a 150. Now you say, you know what? I want a 160.
That's right.
Yep. So you go to 160. Now, hell, Brandon, you're in the 170s.
Yeah.
At some point, you start hunting mature.
Right.
Like you start hunting age.
Yeah, we hunt age more than anything. That's,
right.
That's really what I strive for is age, first of all.
And you know, seeing, you know, we're not biologists here, but we're in the woods a lot. You're in the field a lot of real world
experience.
You know, 5 and 6 year old deer. That's what we're trying to kill.
Yep.
That's my game. That's your game.
Yep.
You know, and so getting to that point, everybody's got cell phone cameras. Okay, everybody's cell phone guys, and like we were talking, anywhere you go, hey, Chris, look at this. What do you think about this deer? But we identify them the same thing. So on my place, and I don't know about your place, and you'll answer on that, but if we find one or two good genetic deer that we want to save or mature, ready to kill.
Yeah, a lot of times you're identifying that dude at maybe two.
Two and three.
Most of the time, he's showing at two.
You can tell that special deer.
They're going to show
two and a half years old. That's right. Exactly.
Because you can show some of those eights to sneak in on you, but most of the time, if he's got the genetic code for
tines. Well, he visited some pictures with me, 178, and deer at 2 years old looked like something you'd call.
And that
kind of makes me wonder because we'll shoot. We shoot a lot of culls.
He's made me think a lot for the upcoming years what I'm not going to shoot just to see what they do.
The people that are really serious about killing these big deer, and everybody is. Look, you're not going out there planting all these green fields, burning this stuff, buying land. You're trying to kill a big deer.
Yeah, well, look, let's set the table long because let's not run too far. You mentioned you're talking about a specific deer.
That's right.
And I know you. I'm not going to put you on the spot to brag, but let's just give maybe the last 3 years or so, run down that resume. What led to us bringing you in here?
The last three years of deer.
Last 3 years.
Well, because
you're on a pretty
year?
Good run. Aren't you?
I had a pretty good run. I've killed. I tell you what. The I think 2015 is when I killed my first over 150s with a bow. Yeah, and then it took me a couple
with
years.
With a bow? Some,
yeah, with a bow. Killed a couple nice deer after that, 30s, 40s type. And then 2019, I shot a deer that I named Capone. Right. That was just a stud. He was just shy of 160.
Awesome.
The next year, I think I killed three over 130 to 140. No, it was 150 with the bow.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people hadn't seen those.
Right. That's right.
Well, you got really nice deer. Hey, look, he looked at me kind of funny when I said 3 years.
But I had, that was,
he,
you know.
He got real specific. He said the last 3 years?
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Well, you know.
Up a little bit.
Hey, well, yeah. Check this 170 out. Oh, hell, don't worry about them 150s. I mean, hell, we'll get them later, you know.
And then this past year.
Yeah, I reeled him in.
Really good deer.
I had a phenomenal season. I killed that first deer that I called Mondo that just blew up. And I was telling you about earlier.
100 pounds.
That was probably, he was probably roughly 170 last year as a four-year-old. 120 maybe inch deer. Blew up to 152. Mm. Killed him as 274 pounds.
Now, that's in Mississippi, y'all. That's not in Kansas or Wisconsin.
That's right.
That's Mississippi.
That's in Mississippi. These are all Mississippi deer.
Right.
And then on the same property, and it's funny, on opposite ends of the property. Now, they're not even a mile apart.
Sure.
These two deer, one that he was, Mondo was 152, and the deer I call the dagger buck was 155. He's a mainframe 8-point with a couple kickers and stickers.
Well, that big old dagger on
him. That's right. I killed them all within 3 weeks, a little over 3 weeks. Mondo him, and then that 178.
Golly.
And but, that dagger buck, though, him and Mondo, they never crossed paths that I ever saw. I ran my cameras.
But lived on the same place.
Lived on the same farm. So I own 450 acres right there.
That's wild.
And never saw either of them on either side of the
fence. So that gives y'all some context.
Yeah.
A couple of things. One, why we wanted to bring you
His credibility.
Because none of these, I would say, were, and this isn't. Dimension, there's a lot of people love the mystery and the luck, if you will, in hunting. Like we said about, picking what kind of deer you want. Whatever you're in it for, go do that. That's great. But these are deer you identify and you intentionally it becomes that one-on-one.
That's right.
That's what's fun. That's right. That's what I enjoy. It's that chess match.
That's right. And like I said, that the Mondo deer that I was telling you about, I've watched him for 2 years. I may know him from when he was three. I don't recognize him.
Right.
The other buck, though, I've been watching him all summer. I have a feeding program that I have my deer on all year long.
Right.
And
all year.
That helps.
All year.
Yeah.
And when he showed up, I knew he was going to be a superstar. I knew he was going to be a super nice deer. And then, he actually disappeared for a little while. So I only hunted that 10-point Mondo. That's the only deer that I hunted.
Because this other one was gone.
The other one was gone. Yeah, he was gone. Disappeared. He came back. And about the time I killed Mondo, really, he came back, and I went and I started hunting him. And actually, my daughter, my four-year-old, after I killed that deer, I was like, I'm going to take a break for a few days. I'm not even going to hunt this dagger buck.
Right.
She likes to run. I don't know why. So I was on my golf cart. She said, let's go run. She ran straight into that deer. Hey, that deer, I had him on camera, watching him on camera. She ran right to him and ran him off, and I just laughed. I was like, well, he'll be back sooner or later. We're on a farm.
That's right.
They're used to us running back and forth.
And y'all run production ag on this property?
Production ag, yeah, that's right. We row crop corn and cotton.
So, Brandon, don't you think, let me ask you this, and we talked a little bit before, don't you think those deer, the more you spend around them all year, they get used to you?
Oh, they absolutely get used to you. Absolutely.
I mean, you told us a little thing about slamming a door.
Feed one of my properties, when I get done feeding every spot, I'll just slam my door. I'm not worried about them. I'll talk to my buddies or whatever.
Right.
Slam my door.
Conditioning them.
Now, they're used to me. By the time I leave, I can barely get off the field and on the road. And
camera's
I'm getting
going
pictures.
Off.
Getting pictures of them. They're coming in.
And what my idea about this podcast was, I was telling Brent, I said, Brent, we talk about managing these deer and getting them 4 and 5 years old. But really, every one of us, even the people listening, we get pictures. Look, I watch that Seek One. My daughter loves Seek One.
They kill giants.
But he finds them.
That's right.
Lee finds them. Mm-hmm. Finds them on them. And then he hunts them. And he'll find them sometimes 2 years before he ever kills them.
Yeah.
And so what we're saying, and I was sitting there watching it, and every time Kate comes to my house, we're watching deer. She's 18 years old, 17 years old, and we're watching deer hunting.
Yeah, and she's killed.
Yes.
She kills some big deer.
Yeah. And
that's
so
a big deer.
So she, she loves it. And I started watching. I started putting it together. I said, well, we're doing the same thing here.
Yeah.
On a different scale. We're running these cameras. Look, I go through.
You just ain't doing it behind a McDonald's in Chicago.
I go through a camera yeah. for every 75 acres. Okay, I put a camera for every 75 acres on this place. Okay. I don't think I miss many. Mitt will argue with me a little bit on missing some. But between me and Dr. Reed, we ain't missing many.
Yeah.
And with cameras, and I think you'd agree with that, Brandon, everybody's got these cameras. You very rarely see a, uh-oh, where'd he come from?
It's not very often.
Very often.
Not
I mean, somebody.
That something you may. As to how much ground they cover.
Now, you may see one for the first time when you get into that 178, because what you told us took four days to kill him.
Took me four
you know,
days.
You saw him, and you're like, wow, where'd he come from? But then, as soon as you killed him, a neighbor says, hey, Brandon.
That's right. Called me and said, you ever seen that deer before? I was like, well, I had a pretty sure it's him 2 years ago. Like right. I was telling you on the same plot.
Right.
Probably just about to this day. I mean, it was right before turkey season. I had cameras out looking for turkeys.
Right.
And got him on camera. I know it was him because you could see non-typical side, you know, on that left side.
And the guy was how many miles away?
He was right at four miles from where that deer came from.
And that's crazy.
Yep.
And y'all, the landscape of this land where this deer was, it was a lot of row crop, and then it migrated towards Brandon's, which was all thick timberland.
That's
type
right.
Stuff.
It's all pines and oak trees.
Right,
and woods. Yeah, that's right.
And it's really weird. You know, when you're in, my background's in timber business, but I actually cut the timber off Brandon's place 14 years ago. And now you own it now.
That's right.
Yeah. Dr. Dalkey owned it then.
Dalkey,
it's crazy that circles, circles where people come around and meet.
And that place now, whenever we looked at it the first time, I called my dad and I said, man, we really ought to check this place out a little more.
Right.
It just came up for sale. I was like, this is just a really, really good spot.
Right. It's always in a good area.
And that's right. It's a honey hole.
That's
that spot is a honey hole.
It
There's
is a
been
good
multiple
spot.
Really nice
Big
deer, you know, killed off
Big
of that
deer.
Place. So we made it work.
Yeah.
And
you know,
it's
funny.
It was one of the best things that we did.
I was telling Brandon 14, 15 years ago, a little boy out of high school had never even killed a deer on that place that Brandon's got, one of his places. And the boy put him in a deer stand, and there was three or four of them little young boys. They weren't about 14, 15 years old. He kills a 174, 16 points. And back then, that non-typical 16 point. And here we are 14, 15 years later, you're killing a 170. I mean – predominantly deer.
It's funny how some tracks produce.
Yes, it produces. Well, that genetic code is there.
Just where it's sitting in the landscape.
And it's close enough to ag, that spot that I, you know, all of my big deer typically
out of the
come
flood.
From.
It's out of
that's
the flood.
Right. That's right. They're coming out of that ag and they're moving up into me. But, well, like I was telling you earlier, that 178 that I killed, you know, I was probably the only one in that area that had any green forage.
Good food.
Yeah. And that's when he showed up. I had those turnips, you know.
Because we fought a drought. What Brandon's
like,
talking about.
Great.
We fought a big drought in the fall this year. I mean, we didn't get rain. Late November?
It was great for us farm-wise because we got everything done.
Yeah, got
in a good amount of time. But, for
good
food
harvest.
Plots.
But they was
you know,
a one
was,
week.
I was saying there
was
a
week.
Food plots.
There was a week real early that it rained.
Yeah, if you got them in early,
inches of rain.
That's right. Yeah,
and then it was that, and I know of two. You being the second one, I know
I
of another guy in West Point that grew some, and you know Bobby Cole was one of them. His grass grew up and looked like $1 million. You know.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what really made the difference in that deer coming in because whenever he found that, he came in and he just stayed.
Hell, he didn't stay long.
He didn't stay around too much.
You have a deer of that caliber, you got to hunt him.
He may have got 27 bites before that arrow got
man,
in.
Man, I had to sit on my couch and watch it because I had terrible wind, and I was like, there's no point in hunting anything else. I've already killed these two big deer. If I go out there shoot a doe or something, you know, I'm not going to hunt any other bucks. So I had a north wind blowing straight across my field. For 2 days, I had to watch him on camera because he came in.
Every day
he was on that
That's
property.
Sickening.
And I finally, when the wind swapped out of the south, I snuck
you
in there.
You sneak in there and get him.
And he came in. Well, this is when he came in at 6:15 or something. This is the time change.
Right.
And he came out. I had to watch him at 150 yards. You know, for the rest of the evening, sparring with the buck.
Now, Brandon, tell me how you got out of that stand. Tell me how you got out.
I waited for it to get real dark. And I walk straight north, which is some of the thickest briars that you will ever see in your life.
To
and
keep from blowing
I did him not out. Want to blow that deer out of there. And I told my dad, I said, I may have to dig him, get my dozer in here and push a
push
road
you alone. Yeah.
Just but, you know, that's out. Those extra little things that you have that's to right. do. That's you could have blown that deer out that evening and the story ended right there.
Well, that's right. I tell people all the time, and I've coined this term, but applied pressure. That's a pressure that he wasn't used to. Okay, you would have got down, walked across that field, blew him out of there. We don't know what he had done.
May not have ever seen him again.
May not, and you know, he may have not have cared. But when they're that old and they're that peculiar,
hey, they're not dumb now.
That's what I'm talking about.
Let me ask you.
He just come 4.5 miles.
That's right.
Some good land to get to you.
Yep, that's
you're,
exactly.
You're hunting around that field, and like I said, you're waiting for the right wind. You're waiting for that south. Are you hunting a lock-on that's there? You got a climber where you can adjust. You can get a
I
little
tell
bit
you
different.
What,
how do you
have
go about
a
that?
Lock-on on that field? And my dad's getting a little older. You know Dad.
Right.
He got to he's
ain't gonna appreciate
getting,
that.
But. Well, see, he hadn't said this to me, but I think he's getting to where he doesn't like climbing those lock-ons anymore. He told me he wants to get away with more movement. Yeah. So we actually put up a Banks blind from Ryan Bostic.
Okay.
Noxby Farm.
Yeah.
I bought one of those. And we put it out, and I actually killed that deer out of that bank.
Out of a ground blind?
I had it elevated. I got it elevated 14 blind.
Okay,
feet.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. But, Dad, I'd rather get in that than that lock-on anyway. But, you know,
I just happened to have it there. I like a lock-on, but you can get busted.
You can get busted real quick.
If you go to moving around.
You get five or six does out
typically, I only hunt out of lock-ons. I love a lock-on. But, hey, it was sitting there, and that thing was comfortable.
Yeah,
I was just wondering how mobile, like how specific or how surgical you might get with the wind. Cause like a lot of times so when you talk about wind and hunting the right wind, a lot of times what I've found is if the wind's perfect for me, they may not move cause it's put him at such a disadvantage. So sometimes you want to maybe a cutting or a marginal wind. So I just didn't know if you made,
well, on the,
you
so
got
on,
mobile and would,
well, on this field, Brent, I had no other option for a stand, lock on anything. Yeah. There was
you had
trees.
One, yeah.
I had one line that has trees big enough to put a stand in, and that's only with the south wind. You go to the south side of the field, really small stuff. There's no way you can put a stand.
I
apologize, cutting it 14 years ago. I'm telling you,
it's fine. It's worked out.
Yeah. But you know, it we start talking about the wind, and people hear us, you know. It's so surprising that good hunters, that I call good hunters, they don't pay no attention to the wind.
Yeah.
Oh, you just go. No, you don't. I use Ozonics. I spray down. No.
Yeah. Or they.
You're not gonna fool them. They may allow you to be smelled and not run off, but you ain't going to fool them.
Yeah, and it's a whole different game with the bow.
I ain't
that
no
bow
doubt.
Range instead of rifle.
No
you get
doubt.
Away with a little bit with a rifle, but
you know, people say, "Hey, man, I had all kind of deer." Chris,
I smoked
right
cigarette.
At
how many times you heard
smoking
that?
I smoking. Yeah, I was puffing one out, and then man, they didn't run. They didn't run because they didn't feel danger.
Yeah,
but don't think they didn't smell you.
Oh yeah,
because when she sticks her nose up. She knows, and she looks at that shooting house. She knows you're in there.
Yep.
She knows
something
not,
right.
She may not run, and it goes back to pressure, not blowing every deer in the world down. You can get away with something sometimes.
Yeah, and a lot of those eye smoking stories because the wind was right.
That's right.
And yeah, you could
and
be
they
smoking.
They were just simply smoking.
Right. Yeah, when he was puffing that cig, it was blowing behind
that's
him.
Right.
The day before I killed that deer, I did the window up. I wasn't paying any attention to the doe in front of me. All I was looking at was him.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that window just real slow, and I heard her blow. I said, oh, boy. Mm-hmm. And he looked up.
Golly.
I said, I just blew this. Yeah. And he went back down the feet, walked on around the field, wrecked
his stomach,
on some trees.
His stomach got him.
Oh, yeah. He
was
hungry.
But there again, you wasn't running up through there, rangers and everything else. It was quiet.
Right. That's right.
One thing about bow hunting, and we'd go to Buffalo County, Wisconsin, and hunt, and we ain't done it in years, but you can kill, and you're a proven fact. I mean, you're one of the. I'm gonna get back into bow hunting here. Brent will tell you, I ain't bow hunted here. My bow's right in there, but I haven't bow hunted on my place in years.
You're planting so many other people's.
Yeah, well, we plant a lot of food plots, doing stuff.
Do
well, it's usually the driest time when people are bow hunting. We're planting fields and doing everything else, trying to get ready for winter to get here. Deer plants getting kicked up. We're trying to get everything ordered, but that's probably one of the best times to kill a big deer.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that no early, question. First early the season first, and rut.
You know, first week or so is my favorite time.
You know, when people always say, "Oh man, you the rut, you get him in the rut." I may get him. Brandon may get him 4 miles away.
That's right.
He may get him.
He may get got. Yeah. But it doesn't mean you'll get him.
Yeah. You know
a lot of what we're talking about goes to, we've made this point a lot of times, there's growing big deer. Yeah. And there's killing big deer.
That's right. Yeah. And I tell you what I have done in the past too. That deer I told you about, Capone, is just shy of 160. That was my biggest deer at the time, 2019. Mm-hmm. I let my wind get not bad, but just sketchy. Bad enough.
Marginal.
Extremely marginal. And that deer came in, and he did not have a care in the world because that he had the wind. He had the wind from where danger was supposed to be coming from.
People don't
never thought a second thought about it.
People look at me sideways when I talk about that.
That's right. I love a marginal wind.
I love it. I'll call it a sketchy or a marginal wind. If I go in from the south and I got a north wind and I think he's coming from the north, for him to make that walk, basically it's like you walking through New York City blindfolded.
That's right.
I mean, you've taken his defense. So if you got a little bit of a cutting southeast or southwest, he's going to feel safer. I can still get away with it. And that's why I was asking you. Sometimes I'll use a climber just because if you offset to one side,
Move around as I can, but I'm a lock on guy. I'm not really a climber guy.
Yeah, but I'm glad you said that.
I love a marginal wind.
A marginal or a sketchy wind because he's got to feel safe enough to walk in it. And if the hunter has the perfect wind, he probably is not going to walk in it.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's a good point.
Because he feels defenseless.
That's right. He's blindfolded.
Yep.
He's blindfolded.
And I'm going to, going to identify.
Coin that term, marginal wind.
That is. Look, can we patent them?
We'll try.
Yeah, we've got to apply the pressure and margin. We come
sketchy,
with all kinds of
sketchy wind.
The woodsman's respect, we come with all kinds of stuff. But, going back to Brandon, identifying one at 2 years old, okay? Because I love this type of stuff because I do it every day.
Yeah.
And one of these deer here, and we may talk about it later if we get into it, but we first identified him in the shed sitting right there when he was three. We knew he was going to be pretty special. So the next year, and we fed him. We plant large lab soybeans.
That's about when we started doing that, fencing those beans.
And started fencing the beans. I fenced them for like 45 days, 30 to 45 days. So I try to get them in there early, let them get up because there's so many of them. But, you can plant, this, you're a farmer. You take deer loss every year, more than most people
absolutely
doing as much acres as y'all farm.
Well, they've gotten to where they're eating more cotton these days. Than just
Tear
a cotton.
What's that?
Field,
the salt or sodium?
You think that's what it is? What
I'm
do you
always
think?
I'm curious.
I don't know what it is.
But they just now started last 7-8 years started wearing cotton.
They
out?
Love it.
Do you think they're going now mostly because it was most of Knoxville County was soybeans and corn for a long time.
Long time.
Y'all kind of brought the cotton, the Hercamps.
Yeah, I
mean, no cotton. Y'all were bringing cotton in, and a lot of the Mennonites are planting cotton.
Yeah,
and,
that's
and
a
I
lot.
Mean,
that's a big cotton county.
Big
now,
cotton
now
county
days.
Now. Yep. So you think maybe just that they're getting used to eating those crops? They just said,
I think
what?
A lot of
we're
it is
gonna
that.
Have to change.
I think a lot of it is that's just what they had to eat, but they like it.
They're starting to like it a lot more.
They like it, yeah.
And what Brent's talking about salt content, and Brandon's farming, get into it, but. Most of the stuff are Roundup ready varieties.
Well, see, that's what I've always wondered if it was something with the Roundup
sodium
that was spray on it.
Roundup.
That's right. Yeah. And they liked it, but I'm just not sure that that's what it is.
Maybe they're getting
used
a
to
taste.
Them bedding in it because it's like it's so
they
clean
still,
out there.
Yeah.
Shady
man, when
and
I'm
then,
spraying
but
it in
you
here,
know, cotton,
the year,
man, cotton's not an attractive
plant
to eat. I mean, if you just look at cotton, it's got. I ain't attacking a cotton farmer. I mean, we start talking about
for the shirts, man.
Yeah, that's right. and the good looking tag on front of the truck.
That's right.
But it don't look as lush as a soybean would.
That's exactly right.
But cotton's real stemmy.
Yeah.
When you agree, real
stemmy. That's right.
But they eat
it's
it.
A woody plant.
So they do. They eating it.
They love
it.
They like it. But
I don't
know. Maybe somebody will do some research, figure that one
that's
out.
That's one we're going to step in for a biologist look. If there's one out there listening, we need to know why they're eating this cotton. And I think Staple would want to know, too, could save some money. But Brandon, you seen these deer, because we do the same thing. So we went to feeding these deer. And I went to planting 10 acres of soybeans for one deer.
Really? Yeah.
That's
right.
Deer right there.
Blade Runner.
I believe it.
I fed him. I went too. And look, me and Brent started running cameras early. because Brent found one of the sheds.
We videoed that deer at 3.5. That's I got right. video of him.
Yeah.
Me and Delia were hunting in the concession stand. We got video mm-hmm. of him and saw him several times.
And me and
year,
Marley Kate saw him.
And the next year, he was sort of a homebody, too.
He was. I'll
tell Brent, in one kind of area.
He stayed in 80, 90 acres, just stayed there. And Marley Kate, which, you know, she loves this farm more than life, and she grew up here hunting, and we named the deer because of the big blades.
Yeah.
And I think it was that Olympic
about
guy.
At the same time.
The Olympic guy
he was in court.
Got a little trouble, you know.
Yeah. We had blade runner.
Shooting through the bathroom door or something. But anyway, we won't get into that deal of move. But he, so we just named him. We said, look, we want him. I like this deer. So the next year is when
could
it walked
killed,
out.
Could have killed him.
She could have killed him at one,
10 times.
160 inches.
At 4.5 years old.
And he was four. And then she got up there. Now, you're talking about a 10-year-old girl. And I said, Kate, there he is. She's in my, she's sitting on my leg. And I said, if you want to shoot him, go ahead. She said, well, Daddy, you said he ain't before. I said, it don't matter what I said. You know, you want to shoot him, shoot him. I mean, there he is. I mean, and then she was like, would you shoot him? I said, look, this ain't no. I mean, we not.
Me.
Yeah, yeah. This ain't, look, I'm good. I'm good with you shooting him. She said, no, I don't think I want to shoot him. So then it put the heat on me to keep him alive. So let me tell you, look, we talk about offensive feeding.
Yeah.
I was defensive feeding. I was putting feed and keeping him close. And let me tell you something. You can do that to keep him. And I say defensive feeding. I'm not trying to be a hi-hat, but I didn't want him to get killed because, Brandon, I think you would agree with me, and Brent, I know you would. Not many people would allow a 160-inch deer to go. And I could not.
And not just in Mississippi.
No.
Paul made it with all he had.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I couldn't be mad if somebody did kill him. Yeah.
And his body, so remember that year, he was kind of small. That frame looked even bigger. Like, I mean, he looked like 180.
Brandon, you know, I've always said we got two different deer. We got the big, dark ones that are big, mm-hmm. 225, 30 pounds. We got the same ones down in this bottom that you got in Knoxville.
Yeah.
But we also got the shorter ones, short nose, kind
very
of a,
distinctive.
I've got that at one of my places.
Yeah, 200 pounds is a big one. Okay, yep. 200 pounds. Yep. They don't get that 230 and 240. And he was one of those type deer, and he wound up weighing about 220, I think.
Five and a half.
You know.
Yeah.
But he always had that little short, real short, you know, structure. And but we put those beans on them, and I kept feed and you know, put a lot of heat on me.
Running cameras early.
But look, she got him in youth season because I knew if I didn't get him in youth season, if he's a dominant deer, if he gets on a doe, it don't take him long to get gone and get shot.
That's right.
So she killed him during youth season. Rest of history, you know, made the front page of the Clarion Ledger.
Brian Broome.
Brian did a good article. Anyway. So getting to that point, we identified that deer. There was other nice deer, but we specific, just like you do, that's one that we want to get. Okay? Now, it's a flip of a coin. The end of January, they take a whooping, fighting, whatever they do. Okay? Running does, running these gals everywhere.
Oh, yeah, they got to gain their weight back.
They got, that's right. I mean, they got to come back healthy.
I've got some that still look pretty
poor
right now.
So we have come to inclusion, me and Brent, a lot of them we get on film, we got them January. And I do a big February camera survey. I just got through with mine. I've got them. I put them in a book for next year. Well, sometimes we don't see them next year. Well, they're dead.
That's right.
Something happened to
them. You lose,
I
think we lose a lot more deer than we know.
We lose a lot more than we know. And so that even makes identifying that superstar and hunting that superstar really harder when you look at the statistics to make it work.
Yep.
Now, that's when we try to say, hey, the more we can get into that, if you have two or three superstars, sometimes you have, like you said, you kill two on one farm over 150. I mean, them are two superstars, no question. But a lot of times we don't have that option. So we're doing it because we love it. I can look at you. I've talked to you for an hour now, and I can tell you right now he's crazy about it. He likes to grow big whitetails, and you like to kill them. But growing them, it's a challenge to you.
Oh, I love growing them.
Yeah, and it's just cool. The land, and I mean, it's just a cool part of it.
Yep.
But I think everybody that listens to our podcast that likes deer, everybody wants to get that older deer. I mean, I love it when people come to my deer play. They don't come up and say, hey, Chris, come look at this 6-point. I mean, they're going to say, hey, I got him. Yeah. Come on, look at him. And I get fired up. I love it. I love when people kill good deer. Yeah. I mean, it's just, especially my friends and the people that do it.
Do they get you tore up? Like when you identify one, you get on one. Is it?
Oh, that's all I think about. No, it bothers my wife so bad because that's all I'm. She's like, "What are you doing?"
I mean, there's some real anxiety,
yeah,
right?
I've had several that I've watched. Look, I'm not three to five. The one I killed last year was a 144 inch mainframe eight, and just had barely made him a nine, about an inch long. And I watched him from the time he was three. And just watched him prayed he wasn't going to, wasn't going to die.
I knew at three he was special.
Yeah, I knew he was going to be a nice deer. I knew he was going to be just a monster, but 144-inch deer, that's a nice eight point.
Yeah, that's right.
That's really a nice eight point. That's a classy
and
eight
man,
point.
He hit 5 years old. And I think I killed him October 2nd. Yeah, I had him. That's cool. I had it planned out. I knew what he was doing. And, a lot of my hunting does, it revolves around work. Because there's times that I can't just hunt October 1st,
2nd,
3rd.
Well, y'all got crops in the field.
We got crops. They
got
to come out. Yeah, exactly. But if I have a minute, I'm going to slip up in that stand.
Yeah.
We've kind of been a little wet most falls.
Yeah.
The first fall. And if we get a little bit of rain where I can't pick cotton or something like that,
right,
I'm getting in the stand.
Yeah.
And I've just been lucky enough that I've killed them fairly quick, in October.
But you stay on top of them.
How often do you prefer morning, afternoon, evening? Do you stay out of there in the morning? What's your approach?
I do not hunt in the mornings.
I don't hunt much in the mornings.
I don't hunt much in the mornings. Well, my thing is, the majority of time that I've tried to hunt in the mornings, I have run off more deer than it is worth.
Getting in there.
Exactly. And I'm hunting in a lot of open fields too, especially.
Right. So they're out there feeding. It's
impossible out there, and they're all in those fields, and it's just not worth it to me in the evenings.
I can count the deer in this, and I got a crazy memory. I can remember everything. 95% of them I killed in the evening time. I know of one deer that's a 161 right up that wall right there. I killed him in the morning. That's the only one I've killed in the morning.
Mid-morning rut,
I talk about it, but I don't never do it. I mean, I just evening time, I'll go in there. And if it's a good deer, I'll get my butt in there a little earlier.
Yeah.
If I can. And sit, look.
Access is just so much better.
That 2 o'clock to 4 that you get in there, you may not see much, but everything's quiet.
Yeah.
You let any kind of commotion settle down.
And I think I can sneak out better in the evenings.
Yeah.
Because when it gets dark. I'll turn my lights off and ease out.
But if we're hunting, you think about this for a second. If we're hunting a place that's got a lot of deer, you do. They don't know the difference much. If it's black dark and you hear ch, 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 they're not paying and say, that's a human. I mean, you can get away with a little more. Especially the wind's right. Let it get dark.
Also sitting there watching them, so when all of them leave. I try to let all of them get off my field.
Right.
And then I slip down to my Can-Am and I ease out nice and quiet. As quiet as I can anyway. I think it makes a difference.
It does. And I walk 400 yards to the stand. I'll park that far from them. And the way I got this place set up, the way I set up most of the places that we got, and the girls, I teach them, hey, the approach, getting in, getting out, it's a big thing. Getting in, getting out.
Yeah.
And they're on to it. I mean, Kate will watch her. She said, "Daddy, we think about the wind today." I said, "You ain't going over there. Yeah. You know that wind ain't right." Well, I didn't know.
So do you do anything aside from hunting the wind? Do you do anything extra for scent control? Like, do you have any?
I tell you what, I have an Ozonics.
Yeah.
Do you use it? Yes, sir, I do, and I believe in it. For the most part.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to say that it's 100%
a tree stand. That marginal one that you're talking about.
When I hunt a marginal wind, that Ozonics is going to that tree with me. Otherwise, if I have a good wind, I don't worry about it. But
yeah. That's cool.
I'm not going to say it's 100% because I know it's not.
Right.
But I guarantee you it's at least an insurance policy, a little bit. It's got to be at least 40%. It may jam them a little bit.
And especially since you've got that mentality, which I share, is when that marginal wind is your best odds. So you got to take a little something.
Exactly. And I'll spray down. I'll take a scent-free shower, before I go, especially specific deer.
Okay.
I'll take a scent-free shower, and I go a little bit beyond what I would normally do.
I've just heard a lot of people do that.
Typically when I'm hunting a big deer, he's a big deer.
That's right.
150 plus.
That's right.
So
you're going after a deer that's 5 or 6 years old.
He has seen and smelled and done it all.
He
has been there, done that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you have, and I'm going to hit you with some random kind of just maybe off the wall question some, but I'm just curious because I've just some things that I always that I do. Do you have some tracks? Do you have a place you can go and just kind of where you can just go shoot does or
something? Oh, yeah.
Like, take the pressure off.
Questions
part,
in there.
I tell you
like,
what, a
like
part
the,
of
obviously
the,
on these places when you're hunting a specific big deer, you're not going in there to shoot does. So well, do you have somewhere you can relieve that trigger finger?
Oh, I've got plenty of places I can. I've got buddies that have land that we can go shoot and do whatever we want to. But
right.
That helps. I say that because that helps because we all love hunting too. Like you can burn out if that's all you got and that's all. If your whole season right. is just one big deer and you're going and going,
and a lot
you
of
know
people
you
make that their season.
Yeah,
but if
yeah,
you
a
got
lot of
somewhere
do.
Else.
Oh, I love
go,
going out there.
If you got
shooting
somewhere you can go sling
just
some arrows.
Out of your system.
That makes this yeah. easier.
That's
and
right.
That's kind
yeah,
of
I've got several spots that I can go out there that I'm not worried about. Go out there and shoot some does,
and that's
whatever
a big deal.
I want
that's
to.
Important.
I've got a little spot where I killed those two big deer this year, this past season, that I can shoot. I'd shoot my rifles, whatever, and it will not bother those deer whatsoever.
Wow, just so, used to it.
Yeah, I shoot suppressed when I'm shooting my rifles typically, and that helps out too.
Yeah,
because I like being quiet.
That loudness,
as, you know, I like being quiet as much as I can.
Look,
but
that goes to that culture we tell you. You create a culture. On this, it's kind of like training a dog. You're either doing it actively on purpose or passively by
exactly.
things you don't realize you're yeah. doing.
Exactly.
And
like I said, when I was
that
feeding,
culture
when I'm
property.
Feeding, I make certain noises. It's kind of weird. But.
And they used to. I feed off a Kawasaki mule, okay? And I don't like, I got a Ranger, but that Kawasaki mule holds more. And so we can carry more bang for my buck.
Yeah.
But they know it. They know that sound. And I usually try to feed them on every Wednesday or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, they know those different noises.
And that's right. And I'll try, and especially if I'm patterning a big deer, trying to grow one, I'm going to come down here all through the summer, and I'm going to drive it one time a week.
Yeah.
I'm going to drive
keep
through the whole
conditioned.
Place. Yeah, I'm going to drive through the whole place. Because, look, we think about most people, January 31st is the end of our season. Guess what? It's gone. They're yeah. gone. Everybody's gone. They're at the ball game.
Won't come
they're
out here till next year. Yep.
They're at the beach. They're doing all this
fall.
Stuff. Then next fall, when that yeah. tractor's in there disking or bush hogging right. or spraying, yeah. then those deer are like, you know, where's this been? But I do think, and I have a train track that helps. I think that helps. It comes through here every day. Slow train. They look. I mean, it, so them
they're
are
conditioned to
yeah,
that. It,
they're
that
conditioned
interaction
to that. Interaction. To that.
And I'm like you, Chris. I yeah. on both of my properties that I hunt, my main places that I hunt, I'm out there every week, one time a week, and I put pretty much almost a whole day every single week, and I get tired of it.
Right.
You know? There's times where I'd rather stay at home with my kids and
that's
play
right.
with my kids, and I take my little girl. She got old enough where
she
likes goes
to ride.
With me, and man, she
that's
loves
right.
feeding
yeah.
deer. She loves doing all that stuff.
Marty Kate did the same thing.
But I go out there, and you know, I spend a lot of time
yeah.
feeding during the summertime, you
right.
know, year round, and that's what it takes. If you want to shoot those
think?
Really big deer,
yeah.
you have to put in the effort.
I just fisting to ask you, what do you think? Do you think that feed that you do all summer, are you 80%, 100%? Think that's
oh,
a,
it absolutely helps, and it'll.
So too,
I tell
yeah.
you, but I tell you what it'll do. You know, it's mainly genetics. You know, you know that.
That's right.
It takes yeah. genetics
on
to have a monster
on that Michael
that's
Jordan.
Right,
that's right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that superstar. That's genetics. But this feed, what we're feeding, what I'm feeding them,
taps him.
It can take. Well, it can take that superstar, and it's going to add something to him. But it'll also take an average deer, 130-inch deer. It'll make him 140, 145-inch deer.
Put him up.
It pushes him that, you know, over that little next level.
Yeah.
You know.
You get him that healthy.
That's right. That's right. So you can still add to those just, you know, sort of average deer.
Right.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
You and Mitt have both said it as well as you can say it. You can't, let's say you can't impact or you can't do anything about genetics, but you can sure offset, you can help a lot of
yeah.
poor genetics with nutrition and age.
Exactly.
You got
exactly.
those three pieces of the puzzle, yep. nutrition, age, and genetics. One
you look
can't
at that
fix,
protein intake, you look at that intake, that deer, and you keeping him healthy, you're getting him back from the rut. Hey, he can, if he's ready to explode, if his body's healthy, his horns are going.
That's right.
Yeah. It don't matter what he is, 6-point, whatever,
yeah,
trophy one, but you're getting him and you're feeding him in a high protein, probably high fat content food.
Well, look, here's the other thing.
Yeah.
You're feeding the does too. So
yeah.
you're taking that stress out and healthier doe,
exactly.
healthier phone, hitting
exactly.
the ground quicker. So
yeah,
that's
exactly.
that's you're giving them that head start.
Yeah,
from,
it's not
from
always
the start.
Just about the bucks.
That's right.
You know,
that's
ain't
right.
no doubt. I mean, one of them's carrying 50% of the potential.
Yeah.
You know, and Brandon, do you Do you shoot a lot of does? Do you believe in shooting herd down?
I try to shoot.
Do you probably shoot as many as you should?
I don't shoot as many as I should. Yeah. And I'm kind of picky on the does I shoot, honestly.
Gotcha.
You know, I'm paying attention to their fawns. If they have twins, triplets, whatever.
Because that's a healthy girl.
I'm not shooting
that producer.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm shooting the ones that come out with no fawns. Okay. Trying to shoot if they've got a single fawn that's old enough that I don't like shooting does with young fawns.
Right.
Yeah. My personal opinion, I don't like
softy.
Yeah. So we've got
sometimes.
Brandon, you know you study deer, so you'll like it, but we did a study down here in 2009, 10, 11. So we tagged known age bucks, ear tags, and when we dropped the net on them, if there's doe under it, I said, look, let's tag them all. You know, we got to put them asleep because, I mean, they're in that net jacked up. So we tagged them all because I wanted to see, hey, if number 335, it tagged on my place, but Brandon Herkamp's got him over there 11 miles away, I want to know.
It's good data
to have. It's good data to have, but it gives us data. It wasn't data for the study at Mississippi State, but Brandon, we've got two does. One of them's right across this railroad track, and one of them was killed on Dr. Reed's place this year, 2010. Okay.
How old were they when y'all –
They weren't known age, right? Did they
know?
Well,
one of them was not known age. We figured 1.5, 2 and a half.
Okay.
One of them was a fawn, a doe fawn. She's 14.
15-year-old deer.
And they killed her this
year.
That's
incredible.
You don't
think of them getting that old, really.
No.
Not in the wild.
Well, we think.
That makes me wonder how old some of the hen turkeys are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
ancient.
Yeah. So we think, and my neighbor over here beside me, he's a good, they're a conservation family, and they've got some good places. And he said, Chris, I ain't going to shoot her. I said, that's cool. Let's don't shoot her.
Yeah.
Because she was tagged on me. But she's living on him over there, which, I mean, from crow flies, 100 acres over there. But she's 14, 15 years old. That's, you know, something we say, dang. You know, every book we read, 3 to 5 years, all they're going to live in the wild.
That's all you ever hear.
That's all they teach, and that's all they say. But we know we got pink tags in her ear. And didn't nobody grab her last year and say, look, let's swap these tags out. Let me swap these tags for a little of that food right there, you know. So she's 15 years old. And that's pretty cool. Now, the bucks didn't last. Yeah. They smoked down pretty good.
So, Brandon, you're somewhat of a cover boy for Mississippi Bowhunters Association. So let's talk about, do you shoot a lot outside of hunting? I mean, you shoot a good bit. I mean, you're into bows.
I do not compete, but I shoot my bow quite a bit. I talked about shooting suppressed and all that rifles.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mainly bow hunt.
Yeah. Right. I knew that.
You know, I love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah. How far? Like, what's your take? I mean, you're hunting a lot of ag ground. Let me go ahead and say this up front. Like, I've hunted back. I used to shoot 3D and I used to shoot some 3-spot, but I shoot a lot. And I used to hunt bean fields, summer bean fields, and was very comfortable 60 yards, maybe a stretch further, depending on the condition, depending on the situation.
Yeah, yeah.
And that sounds crazy to some people, but that's legit. The equipment when you shoot that much.
It's not that. As long as you can practice, man, you know, the sky's the limit with these bows.
Yeah. We used to shoot. I'd shoot out in the yard, and I had a trick where I could shoot. I could shoot out to 50 on a pin. I had a 50 pin. And then I could anchor and then look in the V above my peep. And then my 20 pin became a 60 pin. My 30 pin was like a 70 pin. So I had pins all the way out to 90 yards just by changing. And I'd never heard a buddy of mine put me on that. And it's crazy how accurate it was. But now I wouldn't shoot at a deer at 75 or 80. But of course, at that time, that's 12, 15 years ago. Technology's come a little further now with the speed on bows. But.
My bow is set up. Talk a little bit about your
archery equipment.
I could technically shoot my bow to 100. It's accurate to 100. Yeah, it has a pin for 100 yards. You know, I've got it at 100. I personally will not shoot that. I'll shoot 50. That's my breaking point. 50
is a chip shot when you're – I say that tongue in cheek. You know, every situation
it ain't to
different.
Me.
But when you shoot in the yard, I'm going to say for Brandon, 50 yards is a chip shot.
50 yards isn't bad. You know, in the yard, I'll back it up. You know, if I go on a trip somewhere, like I've been to Arizona, mule deer hunting, that kind of stuff.
You've got to be ready. Elk hunting 80, or 80
yards. I'll shoot out there to 80, and I've been I have been extremely accurate at 80.
Wow.
But here
– We used to stack them
I don't
like
just – I don't just – I don't push it a whole lot.
You don't have to.
I, man, and if I can get that sucker,
you don't have to.
Man, 15 yards, I'm all about it.
Yeah, and I feel, you know? I say all that to say, I feel what I love about bow hunting is similar to my approach to turkey hunting. It's not how far I can kill them, it's how close I can get them. I subscribe. That's my philosophy. Yeah. But I do. It's fun to get out there and shoot and stretch those bows out.
Oh,
and
watch that arrow fly. Out in the yard.
100 yards, watching an arrow fly, right. and hitting where you want. That's fun.
Oh,
and if y'all to get into that this summer, get out there with your bow and do that. It's fun.
Yeah.
No, Brandon, it's a lot of fun. Another tool, and we was talking before the thing, and I asked you, and you answered it, so I'm going to ask it again. All those big deer, did any of them ever surprise you? Did you have a picture of them before you killed them? Almost every one of them that you can remember?
Most of them, except for the 178, which was
four days
before.
Right.
So, but no, typically
you're gonna get.
I don't have surprises.
Yeah,
I know pretty much everything that's on my property.
And Sherwin Jones. He put me on these. You know, him and Brent's my tech guys. I'm old school. I don't know how to run. I run no camera.
What
you want to
call it?
little bag of cards there, but they got me on those Reveal cameras.
Yeah.
Best thing I've ever used. Now I want the older ones, not because they're $88 you can get them on eBay, but just because they're easier than them.
Yeah.
Digital. But I'm gonna tell you something. You put enough cameras and Roy Oswalt showed me that trick in Missouri. You put enough cameras on a place, you don't get no surprises.
No.
I tell you this: when you key in on that deer that you want, you can find him. You can find where he's coming, where he's leaving. Where are you spending that time at with enough cameras?
That's right.
Now and listen, people say what they want to. I like that too, because do I want to waste?
Yeah, and so that's Brent, the eventuality we're gonna get.
You got four or five places you hunt, just like you do, Brent. Why do I want to waste? We may only have a couple days. You had 4 days.
That's right.
You had never seen him before. You had 4 days. You killed him. What about that fifth day when he went back over 4 or 5 miles where he came from?
He disappeared. Yeah, exactly.
And so we don't have but just a
shot by a 7-year-old with a crossbow somewhere.
Right. Yeah. A woman or a kid is going to kill you there every time. I'm just saying
Amish with a crossbow.
Yeah, I'm not hating, but I'm saying.
How many times have you said Amish with a crossbow on Facebook every year? It's the same thing every year.
And you think, man, where'd that guy come from? But, you know, we look at all this. You don't have but a couple encounters with these big deer.
That's right.
And if you don't take advantage of them, you may not get that next encounter.
Yeah, you might miss out.
Yeah. And, exactly. and let me tell you something. How many deer have you had on camera that you didn't see no more? And you're like, man, where's that? I mean, I had a perfect 12. You remember him, Brent, down here. Brandon, he was perfect 12.
That deer was beautiful.
He was 4 years old. Perfect 12. I shot him, wounded him. Here we go. But, I mean, stacked. 165 inches, and he was 4, and I knew he was 4, and I shot him at 4. That was, I mean, I'm just telling you.
That was impulse.
Impulse you didn't, because it was bar none a Boone and Crockett.
Yeah.
Bar none, he would have been a Boone and Crockett.
He was Michael Jordan.
Yeah, no question. Perfect 12. Had him showed up the year before. Next year, boom, he blows up.
He was the same year Blade Runner.
He was.
He was that same year.
And
year.
Just times like that on him. And where was Smoke at when we needed him? The smoke could have found us. I blew blood out of him and pushed him. But anyway.
I'm surprised you brought that one up.
I still think about that deer.
Yeah.
That's been 10 years ago.
I had a deer last year.
It's just wild.
He actually ran with the 8-point that I killed. And they were same age. You know, when I watched him at 3, picked up a shed. 4, and actually I picked up his 4-year-old sheds this past summer. I went walking and just happened upon them. 5, he was just a straight 8, giant
browse.
You found
both sheds. Both
I found a 3, the 3 and the 4. And at
but,
5
but both
years,
sheds?
I found both set, both sides with the
wow.
4 years old.
That's cool.
And they were laying about 10 feet apart, probably.
That's cool.
At 3, I only found one side.
Gotcha.
But at 5, he was. I knew he was going to be something pretty good.
Right.
He was 150, probably mid-50s, 8-point.
Yeah.
Perfect 8. Mm. Giant browse. He stuck around. And the only reason I knew he was there is because my cameras, I never saw him on the hoof.
Right.
And he disappeared. December the 8th, I think, last year, never saw him again.
Nobody knows where he's at.
Nobody. I don't know if he got killed. I don't know if, you know.
Yeah, there's always those ones.
If he just died.
You want to say, if he got killed, surely I would have heard about it. I would know.
So I've told everybody that. I've told my dad that. You know, all my buddies.
I had one I hunted a few years ago, that Big Ten, 155-inch deer on a small track. And I was patterning that deer, and the day I was taking off on a Friday. Everything high pressure. We had the weather right. Everything was right, and I ended up needed to be at work for something that came up. I didn't need to not be there, and that deer was in front of my cameras all morning, and never saw him again. And like, so I came in there a few days later when I was able to get in there, and I could tell someone had been in there with a ranger, I think just riding.
Yeah.
And never saw that deer again. And in the back of my mind, I know if somebody around there had killed him, I'd have known about it, but just never saw him again. Out of my life and gone.
Yeah. Me and Brent went to a landowner, a buddy of ours, Tony's, at land he hunts, and Brandon beside it up there where we live in Caledonia. It's not known for huge deer. It's got some nice deer, but there's a 165-inch deer up there, and friends of mine, and he's had pictures of him. Boy, he'd keep them tight, you know. Hey,
yeah.
Let me show you this one. Look here. I mean, he had a blinder. He put his hat off, you know. But the deer just vanished. Gone. So the guy that had land below it, another friend of mine and his, they were out jacking around during turkey season, I think, walking the edge of slough. They didn't have any pictures of the deer. They looked down. Look here. 160-inch deer they pulled out of there. High five. Man, look at this deer. It's awesome. Well, they didn't communicate, the two neighbors, you know, hey, we ain't gonna show you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I try to communicate with Dr. Reeves, man. Listen, it helps. But anyway, they didn't. People try to keep them hid. Well, that deer vanished for 2 years, and I mean, it's dead, been dead. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're up checking every time I check the cameras in the back of their mind, am I gonna pick it up? So one day I saw the deer. So I picked the phone up, called the other neighbor. I said, hey, send me a picture of that deer again you had 2 years ago. Whoa, he sends it to me. I said, deer's dead. No, it ain't. Where? I said, neighbor found it in a slough. They contacted each other, went, looked at, took pictures, and you know, your whole heart was like, but
oh, no.
I mean, it's but they didn't communicate, but they
That's
found
right.
it.
Yeah.
So nobody had shot at the deer, they don't think, but he's dead.
Hey, you never know.
No.
You
and then, I mean, he's in that water.
Die. I think you said earlier, I don't remember if it's before we were recording or after, but man, so many of them die. A lot of them die.
Natural, Mother Nature, listen, man. Y'all, natural mortality will get them. And it's more of them die than you think. But it goes back to Brandon. Tell me about some feed. What do you like? I know you got something that you're working on,
I've got a feed that I've been feeding for a few years
and
now.
And you thought it up yourself.
That's right. And I kind of, part of it I got from some friends and stuff out
sure,
in Texas.
Sure.
That were feeding cottonseed. So I'm taking cottonseed and mixing it with a few other things.
Right.
Some herbs and spices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's really worked. It's
let me get some.
Well, we're going to talk about it when we get off the air.
I'm trying to
commercialize
to this,
it a little bit.
That's right. I'm going to try to start small.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to do it in bulk bags you talked earlier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's gonna be kind of for the guys that can handle bulk bags.
Well, I want to try.
I know it's kind
of
a pain, but
the more that I've started researching, I looked at some DDGs and then I looked at some other stuff, and we went all the way to Missouri one time to get some dry distill grains. Remember that?
We brought back
a whole truckload of them because that's when that bag flew off the truck and hit that man in that Fierro in Memphis, and that damn car went whoom, and I kept right on rolling. And somebody that bag got
They're
going
to listen to this podcast.
Brandon, that bag got loose, and we turned around going to get them, and that car hit that thing, jumped. I said, come on, boys, we're going home. So we kept riding. It's kind of like that fire. I'm giving y'all a tip how to get out of stuff because I have been busted enough. You just go.
Mash it.
Yeah, hopefully the next guy's driving a big truck and it don't affect him like that Fierro did. But I'm going to tell you something. He hopped on it pretty good. But we've tried a lot of things.
I bet he said DDG when he hit it.
If he could have got us. Well, you know how you farmers, they wrap them. Well, somehow that wrapping come undone. We got in Memphis, hit a bridge down our bump, saw that bag come off the top of that thing. I said, oh, God.
Oh.
So we made sure we was out of right exits so they couldn't get to us. But anyway, it's getting them what they like, feeding them. And do you see this feed?
Good for them. Something
do you
good
see
for
this
them.
Feed? Are they
good for them and they'll eat it.
Are
and
they attracted?
Exactly.
That's the thing. There's a lot of good stuff for them.
Even plants.
But yeah, I'll
tell you this much. When I fill up my feeders, they're empty within about 3.5 days.
Wow.
Gone.
Any corn?
There is this corn in the corn. Blend. That's okay, right.
Yeah.
You have that cotton seed Card. Now, and I think it's that's sour. Probably some of the reason why they're eating a lot of my cotton in my fields now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because I've been feeding cotton seed for a long time, yeah, but I have started mixing them. Certain things with it that they mm-hmm. just love.
That you like. That's good.
That's right. And that's it's cool. also got other stuff in it that's good for them,
that's
too.
That's cool.
You know, cotton seed's a fantastic feed, too.
Oh, the
high protein. Yeah, it's like 22% protein. There's all the fat. Yeah, there's good. The fat in there for them. So it's a lot of good. All that cotton seed oil.
I started reading.
It's really good for them.
I started doing some research on the cotton seed, and it showed people those exclusion cages. In
yeah,
Texas.
That's what I was trying to start with.
It out of those exclusion cages.
That's right.
Yep. And I mean, it looked, y'all, I mean, it had cotton on it. And I mean, I was thinking, oh, deer going yeah, he going to be hanging cotton out of his mouth. But, I mean, it was giant deer eating out of them. And you get on YouTube, it's nothing new, and look it up, and those deer eating that cotton
seed. That's
right.
See, that's the main issue with feeding cotton seed is that you have to have something that they can eat. I feed out of troughs.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
Because gravity, I've got gravity feeders too.
Mm-hmm. It'll hang
they
up.
Can't. It hangs up so bad you can't feed cotton seed out of that. Yeah. That's why I've got the mix that I came up with. I was trying to figure out a way to feed gravity for the guys that only had gravity feeders.
Yeah,
it ain't happening.
Right,
it just clogs it up.
It clogs it up.
You know, at the end of the day,
any
if you're
moisture
a big deer hunter like we are.
Yeah,
get some troughs.
What is it? Yeah, just get a couple troughs. I got troughs sitting by every gravity feeder that I have.
I got them right down here. I got my trough and
easy
and
to fill up.
I bought some stuff from Ryan yesterday.
Yeah,
he wanted me to try some. Double J got some mix out, and I said, Ryan, you got it. He said, I'm telling you, Chris, it's alfalfa based. He said, you don't have to mix any corn with it. So it'll be the first pellet I've never mixed corn with. So I said, Ryan, I'm gonna try it. So I put it right down here below the camp house, and with no corn, because now I got those Texas Trophy Hunter. I got two of them, but that's just for protein, and we mix them with corn.
Yeah.
Until I get them on it, and then they take off. Yeah. And, but I try to wing mine. I plant a lot of clover. We got a Belenza clover that we really, really fired up about. I don't know if you've ever planted it, but you need to try it.
I've been planting some white clover, Durana.
Yeah.
I planted
it. I like Durana. I like Durana.
It's so small.
You got some wet areas that don't have good drainage at that Belenza.
That Belenza is – I want to show you one day.
Yeah, I'd like to look at that because this year I need to – I've got to get back on top of it.
Yes, it gets really – and I do my Durana for my turkeys because it's short.
Yeah.
I spray it turkeys.
Well-drained spot. Yeah. Durana's good.
And but that Belenza, I'm telling you, it's a game changer because if we start talking about timing, we want them as quick as they drop their horns, which is now. Now in the next week or so, 2 weeks.
Is hopping.
And two, when we start putting beans in the ground, what is that? What's the date on that?
I'm not a bean farmer. I'm a
April.
Corn and cotton. Yeah.
You know,
at early April, anyway.
Yeah. Early April is weather related.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I've got some buddies that are, as soon as we start planting corn.
Right.
They typically plant their corn first.
So you start planting corn in March, won't you?
Well, you'll see a lot of beans coming in behind wheat late.
We backed up a little bit. We plant April 10th.
Okay.
Is where we kind of like to start our corn. But we have a lot of irrigation, too.
Yeah.
These guys started, they planted their beans first last year.
Yes.
And did really well with it.
Really good beans, 70, 80 bushels beans.
That's right. So they're going to do, I think they may do beans again first this year. So they're around, mid-April, first
You're flipping that corn on that Easter.
Either way, you got that window between antler drop and bean.
But
even if they're planting them, when they get up where they can utilize them.
I don't want them, when they're growing them horns back, I don't want a week to go by that they ain't got something.
Without some sort of feed, that's exactly right.
Some sort of high quality.
Yeah. Okay? I told myself this year that I was going to get my feed back out towards the end of rut, and I hadn't done it. I've had so much going on with kids and everything. I hadn't done it. That's when I would really like to get my protein back out to them.
Well, I put my minerals out this week.
The end of the rut.
I start putting my minerals out.
The one thing that with cotton seed, and I don't think they eat enough to affect them, but it can sterilize them.
Really?
But it only sterilizes until that it's a chemical called gospel, if I'm pronouncing it right.
Okay.
In cottonseed, if they eat enough of it.
I don't think they're getting enough.
I've got a friend with a ranch in Texas that he feeds year round cottonseed and never had an issue with fawns.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're getting enough of it to make that much a difference.
But you throw it out there,
you know, like a cow, you know, they'll sit there and eat it and eat it and eat it. It'll sterilize. You know, it'll sterilize.
Brandon, you know this. A deer ain't gonna sit there and just
they
eat.
Don't.
Eat.
They're no,
gonna
they're, no, they don't.
They're gonna go over and
they
get a
nibble
little,
a little bit, and they go
gonna
graze
go over
somewhere.
And get something else.
That's exactly right.
You know, but what we've got to do is every bite that they take over here, not just in the feed, but be a good bite.
That's right. You want, yeah.
Some clover, some burn plantations. It's got some good stuff coming back. Yep. So every bite that we give them, we want it to be high quality.
That's right.
You know, we know that the deer can eat off of bark off of a tree if they have to survive. But we want that best quality because we're exactly. trying to go to the horn production.
Exactly.
You know, we're trying to make that deer healthier.
Yep.
You know, so that's why, like we talk about tools in the toolbox, burning, supplemental feeding, clover, summertime food plots, okay? And you know, and that's, I know we're getting serious on serious deer, but there's a lot of serious deer hunters out there. I mean, as much as these land...
Yeah, these are serious
much
deer
as this
behind
land
me.
Is costing no people, doubt. You know, much of these land's costing people now they're getting in it, they're buying hunting places. They're wanting a place by Brandon Herkamp, okay? They're wanting that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've you know, had people trying to move
right,
in around me on some
right.
of my places.
But, you know, as
make
long
you think
as they're
about posting them on
yeah.
Facebook.
Yeah, well. As long as they're good name. You're one of the only ones that I know that'll post them. And because I'll my boy said, Brandon got another one. He looked at him. God almighty, what a deal. And it seems like he carries that damn cedar tree around with him because he always takes that one cedar
that's
tree.
Very
I'm telling you, man.
Yeah,
I keep
that
the
same
secret.
Tree.
It almost felt like in Lee Mall when we were little kids, we'd go over and get that picture, that Christmas picture made with that little thing. And Brandon's got that deer held up. But it's to find somebody serious about it. And because you love it, I can tell. I mean, I can tell your demeanor about it and how you do it. And look, I guarantee, look, to this year, I went and bought another buggy of corn from Sherwin M to keep 3-10 points alive. Okay? I did that. And I told Brent, I said, because I told my daughters, and Marty Kay to blow them down, and look, it's her place as good as it is anybody's. But I said, Kate, look, we got to protect these three. And,
oh, yeah.
and we watching them today. I mean, we've seen them last night on a camera. But you know, I defensive fed. I put extra feed. I did it because I didn't want them to get killed. They were in their 140s.
Mm-hmm.
They were 3 and 4. You know, I told you about my EHD.
Yeah.
You know, we had some, you know, blue tongue kill a bunch of them, but defensive feeding these deer, you can do that too. I mean, it's very easy. Guess what? Don't shoot them and feed them.
Yeah.
That's defensive right
hey, man,
there. I mean, they're
slaves to their stomachs.
Hey, they react.
That,
time,
that goes into what we talked about.
They
about
react
the,
to it.
There's growing one. There's protecting one. There's killing one. I mean, you got to have all, unless you're lucky enough to have property next to one of y'all, where y'all yeah. handle the growing, right. I just do the killing.
Right.
But most of the time, it's kind of intimate. You know, it's one-on-one. Yeah. You know that deer. You're familiar with him. You probably some of those times when you're hunting with a deer, it's the last thing you think about before you go to bed sometimes.
Yeah. Man, I've woken
on
up
that
at,
sucker and wake
I'm
up.
I'm telling you, I've woken up at 2, 3 in the morning.
Thinking about them.
Checking on them.
Checking my cameras to see if they came back, you know, yeah. make sure they're still in
and,
there.
And, you know, I know it. People's like, dang, man, that's kind of crazy. Kind of, but
yeah.
that's
it is.
You,
so
oh,
what?
It is crazy. yeah, it's yeah, extremely okay. crazy.
Yeah, we hadn't denied that.
No, but that's the game, and that's – loving land.
That's right.
Managing your own place. Seeing, I mean, and look, being around, you don't seem like a hater. I mean, you if Lee kills a big deer,
oh,
you fired
man,
up
I
for Lee.
I love it. I love seeing
yeah,
my buddies
right.
shoot big
that's
deer.
Right.
That's exactly
and,
right.
You know, it's a it's
well, the other thing is when you're running the cameras, and we talked about the tools and the things you do to be able to have that one-on-one very intentional game, is you also that other deer. So you may be hunting one deer this year. You're engaged in this, maybe with a 5-year-old. Well, you got another 4 or 3-year-old.
You've
already
seen one of them.
You already know him, and so you're not caught off guard. You're not surprised.
Yeah,
and that's a big thing too. That's the other side of the camera issue. It's not so much I identify the deer I want to kill, and I pinpoint him, and I use it to help me kill him, but I identify the deer I don't want to shoot.
Exactly.
So I'm not caught off guard. If he comes in there at dusk when you're in there bow hunting.
And you met, because I've had times, I've had some of these deer now that have come in, if I didn't know that they existed,
you may well have shot them.
They'd have gotten shot.
Yeah.
I know for a fact they'd have gotten shot.
But
I tell
you,
you've
already made that decision.
So that's one
you've
thing, you know,
studied,
talking about people hating
decision.
On cameras.
Yeah.
That's one of the best things to me about cameras is that I know what I'm looking for.
It takes that element out of it.
Exactly. And I've had people say, well, it's cheating, it's this. It's, no, it's not. It's a tool.
It's a tool.
That, and I would even say the same to a degree about feeding and baiting. You know, a lot of people, you know, we come up through an era where it was illegal, and, you know, y'all talk about the guys that were doing it.
You kind of look around to make sure.
But you, what a tool it is to get the deer out there where you can make a sound management decision. Exactly. Now, there's a lot of other things that go along with it, with other species and corn and changing their patterns, and I get all that. But strictly from a management standpoint, strictly making the right decision to shoot it, puts them out there
where you can look
where
at
you can make you the can, right yeah, decision.
You can decide.
Brandon, this year, in this bottom, I don't know about yours, our acorn crop was one of the poorest we've ever had. We just didn't have any. Neighbors didn't have any. So what were those deer supposed to eat on? They can't just eat green. Yeah,
drought. You know, no green fields early.
Yeah,
no,
it wasn't a whole lot of feed this
year.
There
was not a lot. And even at the deer plant, we'd see does come in. They were narrow, a little skinny. But let me tell you something. People, it was a record corn year. My buddy at the co-op runs a co-op. I imagine Ryan would say it
record sales.
It was a record corn year for sales because...
I've talked around about it. Yeah,
right. People
sold a lot of corn this year.
People were feeding them, but they didn't shoot everyone that come to it. Look, I've had this conversation with Mark McCluskey, one of my dear friends. He's a game warden. I said, Mark, if I'm foolish enough to buy this corn and feed these deer legally, we can feed them legally, and I do it, but I only kill one this year, Brandon. I killed one buck, 153. That's all the deer I killed. But I fed plenty.
Yeah, and look, I've grumbled all bow season. I'm hunting small tracks, and there's some... I'll bow hunt some small tracks. I'm on acorns and funnels and all that. And I'll grumble and fuss about the feeding. So I'm not just talking out both sides of my mouth. There are things I don't necessarily like about it. But as a management tool, on a property like this, you know, we talk about having the places you can just go shoot, and then you've got a track where you're growing big deer, and it's more of a long-term game. It helps.
Oh, it helps.
You can't do it without it.
We don't have... I hunted in one of the finest places in Missouri, Roy Oswalt. Great place. You'd go there, you'd see 15, 20, 25 deer, 150, 10 points on one place. Okay? 160s. He killed 180s. All these deer. We don't have those deer. We can grow them as big, but we don't have the amounts of them.
No, not even
that
close.
They have. Okay? Mm-hmm. Buffalo County, Wisconsin. We hunted there for years, number of years. Every year we were seeing, killing a 150 to 160 to up to 170 deer on it every year. We don't have that in the South. Okay? You would agree with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We don't. So we've got to manage that one deer.
Yep.
We've got to manage those two superstars. Yep. We've got to take that gamble, and it's a gamble. Okay? Natural mortality, somebody shooting it, somebody hitting by the car. Okay? We've got to take that gamble. But
EHD.
EHD. But I think the gamble is worth it.
It's worth it. And I'm telling you right now,
you got deer on your wall.
Everything that I have to do
on this wall
to keep that deer
alive
on my place and alive. I'm gonna keep it as close as I can. Yep. So I'm gonna feed, like I said, I feed year round.
Yeah.
I sent you a picture of that deer when we talked the other day.
Yeah.
That's a 3-year old. That's the one that I watched last year at two, and he really wasn't anything. I wouldn't have called him a superstar. 90-inch, 2-year-old, probably mid-40s,
so
he's a 3-year-old 8-point.
That's wild.
Low to mid-40s.
So
that picture I sent
you
was 850 yards through a rifle scope.
Yeah. So 2 more years, that's potential one that
exactly
makes bow hunting magazine.
If he can make it 2 or 3 more years, he'll be a world-class 8-point.
And
if he can make it.
And, Brandon, I get to see so many deer at the deer plant. You know, we get 2,500 deer in. You get to see so many superstars, 10 points come in this big.
Yeah.
1 year, one year old.
Makes you sick.
Well, I look at them and I kind of just look away and I'm
high five.
Yeah, but I'm thinking $100 bill. Hey, man.
Yeah.
but you see people, and I don't know what they're hunting. They may be hunting pawpaws 25 acres or in the back of a field and they're happy with it. But I see potential and I love the state of Mississippi. I love hunting Mississippi. I love seeing Mississippi deer kill, whether it's in Delta, Knoxby, wherever they're at. I keep up with it, and I like it because I've hunted Midwest, and we got the biggest deer. Y'all have really that big deer in Mississippi. I said, no, we really do.
Got pretty good ones.
We got some good deer, and we're the two dummies that's talking about them. Those cats in the Delta won't talk about them. Uh-uh. It's a big secret over there. I know of one guy that's got 50 of them mounted, and their biggest deer – when I look at them, I said, you would think Kansas. No, they come right out of LaFleur County. Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
They grow some giants.
Giants, but they don't talk about them. They're really quiet on them. And I understand the game. I mean, I understand
that's
that.
That's right.
But if we can't, that's why we put this podcast together. If we can't share some of this stuff, how are we going to ask this guy to do right down here?
Yeah. If I don't share with him,
see, I try to talk to my neighbors as much as I can.
Let them in on what you.
Let them in. Tell them what I'm doing. Say, look, man, like that deer, that 3-year old. I said, look, I'm not shooting this deer for 2 more years. And he's like, you know, okay, we'll try not to. You know, ain't gonna make any promises because he's probably gonna blow up at 4, and I'm not gonna be mad at him if he does.
Once you know your neighbor isn't, that takes away a lot of that.
Oh yeah, and I enjoy being able to text him pictures back and forth. Some, you know, and let's talk about it a little bit.
If we keep it all bottled up, we don't ever get to enjoy it.
That's right.
We keep it all bottled up for what? What are we gonna share it with your daughter, like I do with my daughter? Hey, you got to be able to talk about it. And if it helps one guy, if one guy looks at that deer, Brandon, take my neighbor for example. He sees that deer, he said, Chris, I ain't going to shoot. I'm not going to shoot it. Because you may feel a little bit embarrassment. And if I do shoot, I can't put it out there because Chris doesn't let it go 5 times.
Well, that accountability. Yeah. And then that look, I mean, that's
it takes one deer. Whether, part of it. Whether he kills it at 5.5, I'll be fired up, or I kill it at 5.5, we let it get that old.
That's right. Yeah.
We both protect, we both grew it together. So, Brent, tell you, I burn for my neighbor. Don't charge him a dime. I'll burn his stuff because I know my deer's going to eat in his place.
Yeah. They don't, they're not just specific to your area.
They're
going to move around. That's right.
And my philosophy, and I try, and we start talking about habitat, okay? And I was talking to your buddy Lee earlier, and Lee was taking some cedars out. Mm-hmm. He said, Chris, I want to put a little more cover. I said, Lee, you ain't going to miss them cedars. They do nothing for you. If you got some good grass to come up in there,
bring it back some natural grasses
that they can lay in. Hey, game on.
That's right.
I think, and I'm doing some stuff down in the bottom right now, thinking about some stuff, putting some little old thick stuff, and I'm trying to get it back to little mini thickets, little mini cane thickets, okay, all over. And we're going to do something on it a little later. But it's making those deer, I've noticed that these bigger deer don't like being around other deer.
Yeah, they're like those old men.
They're grumpy. Like, they're grumpy.
They don't, that social network.
I know how they feel sometimes.
Yeah. It's like that guy. It's like that old man up there at Hardee's eating that bacon, egg, and cheese, and you come in and say, how's that biscuit? You're like, well, my bad, dude. You know, I'd have bought it for you if you know. But it just, I've noticed that when they get a certain age, they don't want to be around.
Yeah. Mitt framed it pretty good. You talk about like the old man likes to read or something. He's sitting around the house, and when company comes over, he just kind of slips off to his office or to his study.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of these big mature deer do.
Most of the ones that I've killed, they're like that. They come in completely
or
by
they'll come on the field and deer leave. Yeah, the deer move away.
That's exactly right.
So a lot of my bedding covers bigger 30 and 40 acre spots of grass. So what I'm trying to do is pan some smaller spots that's individual thickets for some of these deer. I can't prove that they're going to use them. But look, that study that Bronson come out, well, that buck, one of those bucks used, what was it, 36 different bedding locations? Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He just didn't – he bedded 36 different places on his property.
Yeah.
Give
him more options.
Give him more options.
More options within that same footprint of acreage.
Yeah, right.
You never know that they are, but that you don't know that they're not.
Right. Well, I tell you this. Once you make them and you're taking open canopy little saplings and you're putting some thicker stuff, I promise you something's going to use them.
Yeah.
One of these deer are going to use them.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, we're playing with some stuff, and I think it's going to be a pretty good little thing.
Look, you may have to come back. We didn't even get into turkeys and these turkey calls you make. I got him to bring a few turkey calls.
Yeah,
I had
Brandon some Boston Butt sausage up here.
I've been eyeballing the sausage over here too.
He brought us a big bag of calls over here, so we could have fired up about that.
Yeah.
Well, look, y'all, that was a
I enjoy talking about deer. We've been on turkeys and trapping and a lot of other things lately that I love.
I love to turkey hunt, and I think you do too.
Oh, I love turkey hunting, but
my deer's in my
mind. Yeah, they've always got.
I love to grow them.
I always catch myself when I'm turkey hunting. I'm looking for sheds the whole time.
Yeah,
constantly looking for sheds.
And Brent's he's got damn eyeballs for sheds. He can spot them, man. He finds them everywhere we go.
You may need to go with me this year, I guess, turkey hunting.
I mean, he can find some sheds.
I bet.
We started.
That was him, wasn't it?
Yeah. But we started really looking for some now. And they shed, and I found some. Look, when we did a little coon roundup, I found a 10-point sitting right there together.
Yeah.
And I thought, well,
you know, my deer, they typically don't drop until I've got another 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah,
well, this one I found pictures of a beautiful young Clay 10 County. Point on that listing I got in Columbia Lowndes County.
Has he already got like his
three-year-old?
Still got them up
beautiful
there.
Beautiful 10.
Yeah, mine hold.
Up.
They well, hold
my
late.
My two big deer, the three big deer that we got, they all three hard horns. Yep. They're still hard horns.
But you know, the good thing, to, in my opinion, about holding late, they hold that velvet a little later too.
It's a good point.
Because I've killed velvet deer the past several years, almost every year, because they're holding my big deer hold their velvet for
and you know where that's
the
going
first
from.
Probably 2 weeks.
You know where that's going
a week
from.
And a half.
It's when they're born. Reason.
That's when they're born. That's right. Yeah.
I mean it's
that's right.
It's the timing, and that's another different thing I don't want to get into. We'll have people so confused, but you know the timing they're born.
Well, we'll go another hour, and I'll be eyeballing that sausage.
Yeah. So anyway,
my wife be calling me.
Yeah, where you at? Where you
went? I made a friend. Leave me alone.
Yeah, that's right. Well, look, Brent, I thought that's pretty good. Brandon,
man.
I'm going to tell you something.
I enjoyed it.
I appreciate you coming.
I'm glad
in
y'all invited me.
I'm a big fan of you and your dad. You know, aside from hunting, y'all just good people.
Well, we've known each other for quite a while now.
I hear a lot about him, but what I've heard about him. And what my conversation today about him has been spot on.
Yep.
He can kill big deer.
Good. Yeah.
You see why?
Ain't no question.
Serious about it.
No question.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I do my best. And I put a lot of effort, time and effort into it.
Look, I want to get this feed going.
I'll let you know.
We want you to come back on, and we want you to talk about it.
I'll bring some over here, and I'll show it to you.
When you get ready to put it out there, we want to help you all we can.
Heck yeah.
Thank you. I sure appreciate it.
Yep.
All right. Well, we'll catch you on the next one.
Sounds good.
See you.